The what movie? The, what the movie does right is the American Civil War.
Hello, Internet, and welcome to the A to Z Horrorcast. This is the Great of the Town podcast brought to you by us over at AtoZHorror.com. I'm Jack, and sitting across from me is Jake.
And life is for the living, Jack.
And sitting next to Jake is someone else who likes to gorge himself to bloatation. It's Mark.
Hello.
Well done, sir. You're perfect.
There's
going
to be a lot of that. There's going to be a lot of sing talking.
I'm not going to harmonize with you. I refuse.
I know. That wasn't on the table to begin with.
For those of you unfamiliar with our crack check operation, Jake, you are the person I can't imagine a person being less capable of harmonizing with someone else than you.
Jesus.
Yeah, that was...
This is all very rude. You know what, Jack? Continue with your intro.
I don't know. I don't know. Capable was the right word. I feel like less likely.
That's probably accurate. Yeah.
Whatever.
Holistically going to happen.
I'm just going to be quiet. Speak when spoken to.
Jack, do your
spiel. Good start. Yeah. We watch a review one horror movie a week, and then we get drunk and argue about it. This week, we watch 2007's Sweeney Todd, colon, the Demon Barber of Fleet Street. And that was a pick from Patreon member TJ. So TJ, thank you very much for the support and for the pick. And we'll dive all the way into that real soon. And when we do, fair warning, we're going to spoil the absolute nonsense out of it. And we do have a Patreon going, but we're not where your money should be going. So, as it has been for the better part of this year, all of our Patreon proceeds are going to go to Planned Parenthood. So you can head over to patreon.com/ATOZHorror, support the show at your level of choosing, get some cool perks for your troubles, and know your money is going somewhere better than our dumb asses. And hey, if you need a little escapism, hopefully you can have some fun in the horror world with us for at least the next little bit. And boys, you know what that means. It's time to do the getting drunk part. So let's score. Let's do beers for fears. And I want to start this one because I think you guys are going to roast me for my beer choice.
No, but, never. Not us. Huh?
But I made a beer choice, and I made a hell of a choice. I wandered down to the Beer Lab HI. Jake, you've been there.
Beer Lab High.
The University District in Honolulu. And they have a little beer on tap called Qui Vivra Verra, which is a French phrase that means essentially time will tell. It's the person who lives will see, effectively. And this is a beer type I was unfamiliar with before I had it. It's a beer de garde.
Beer de garde. Yeah.
Which, I don't know, it kind of tastes like a weird pale ale to me. I don't really know what it's supposed to be.
Okay.
Is that a type of beer? I've never heard of that.
Yeah, beer de garde.
Apparently.
It's like
I have neither.
French farmhouse ale.
Okay.
It's kind of like a fermented tasting pale ale.
It's
sort of.
It's a saison, basically.
I mean, it's all fermented.
Okay.
Yeah.
It tastes more like a pale ale than a saison to me. But that also might just be this particular one.
Right. A saison's a wide range. It's a particular type.
Yeah. Either way, I got this for a few reasons. One, that's kind of the whole plot of the movie, right? A guy who bides his time for revenge and ends up being the one who kills the other guy. And Qui Vivra Verra is a like kind of revenge. Like, we'll see. Time will tell. I'll get you in the end. And that's what happens here. Even if then ultimately he, you know, wants to die himself. But then also it's European, like this movie. Very European. Like the character of Sweeney Todd from the Penny Dreadful comics from the early 1800s. I'm not sure when those Penny Dreadful things happened.
So I think it was the 1970s. So your beer goes out to Toby? Is that what this is?
No. I mean, Sweeney Todd or whatever his
actual name
is.
Toby's the one who lives. We said spoilers already, but Toby's the one who lives.
Yeah, so he's the one who lives. So there, it goes out to him too, but also Beetle Bailey. What's Johnny Depp's name before he becomes Sweeney Todd? It's alliterative. Bob Barker? That's probably not
it. Bob Barker.
Whatever
it's close
it was.
To that. It is something Barker, isn't it?
Use the phrase as well, because the judge like gets him good by framing him for murder and stealing his wife. But then, time will tell, he ends up killing him. Spoilers.
Lots of spoilers. Lots
and European. And it's European. Mark, did you say 1970s is when the Penny Dreadful things happened?
Yeah.
Okay, that's probably it. Jake, what about you? What are your beers?
I'm doing a spirits thing this week, guys. I'm drinking London Dry Gin. Yeah, just drinking gin, man.
A wee dram. That was my backup. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
It just felt like a better choice. I'm getting really fucking sick of picking beer names to go with movies. Like, I'm exhausted by it. So. Yeah.
You know what I was reminiscing about when I was editing an episode recently during the intro? You were saying you got really sick of that, and I said, I do too. That's why this week I didn't do that. And then when it came around to me, I don't know what I was thinking, because I definitely did that, but nobody called me out on it. I don't know what was going on.
We're very kind on this podcast.
Yeah, that's all
we never. We don't roast Jack enough.
No, we don't. That can change.
Either way, there is so much gin consumed in this movie. It's a, you know, a great choice. Mark, what about you?
Well, this movie takes place in London, and I'm drinking a Union Jack IPA. That's the flag that flies
Firestone
above
Walker,
London. This is one of my favorite beers, also. I need very little excuse to drink a Union Jack. This is probably at least top five, probably top three for me.
It is Firestone Walker, right?
Yes.
Okay. I like it. You know what? No stinkers in the mix this week. I'll say that.
Yeah. We did good. We did good.
Go us. We rock.
Everybody, let's take a moment to pat ourselves on the back.
I can't reach my back.
Well, I mean, you sacrifice flexibility when you tack on mass.
Just pop my arm out of socket.
Yep.
But drinking beers and watching Sweeney Todd isn't the only thing we did over the course of the last month, because it's been a month since we recorded. And ordinarily we'd tell you about it, but as these are coming out, we don't really do Rocking Horror Worlds anymore. We kind of only do Horror Release Roundup these days, because that's the only time the episodes actually
come out.
There
have been a lot of vacations happening. We're not talking about this, but just so you know, I have 12 to talk about the next time we do a
I have so many. We should probably just do a full podcast of other stuff to talk about.
We're going to. That's what we always do around this time of year.
That's going to be.
I have many, many to talk about, including something's in the dirt, and I'm dying to talk about it. Either way, we're going to do the Horror Release Roundup, because as we record this, it's like the somethingth of December. It's pretty early on in December.
It's the 4th.
So why don't we talk about it? Yeah, let's talk about the movies coming out in December, the horror movies. We don't do bottom ones anymore, so we'll just do like a dark horse and a top one. Jake?
Did we? Hold on. I'm just thinking. Look. At the time of this recording, have we released the episode where we talk about the November movies?
Probably not.
No,
I think that was Bubba Hotep, and that is coming out today, I hope.
We are such a slapdash.
We went a solid month without releasing an episode. Listeners, I truly apologize.
We're no longer weekly. We just do what we do. We're still trying, you know, we're trying to bring content to the people, as everyone does.
Exactly.
What do you want from me, Jack?
Probably a dark horse.
You were giving me a weird look, and I thought you were gonna. Yeah,
you thought I was gonna talk about a movie, or just
what
talk
do we
about
do?
You?
Oh yeah, let's do it. Let's
are
do
you
dark
vamping
horses.
To bring up your list? Is that what's happening right now? Okay, got
it. Does
exactly
feel like he's vamping. Mark, why don't you hit us? What's a dark horse pick you want to talk about?
History of the Occult, which I thought was going to be a documentary on the history of the occult. No,
well,
sir.
This is an interesting choice.
No, it was not. So this is a movie that's coming to Screambox in like the middle of the month. And it, well,
looks
I guess, sorry.
Like such an art house pick.
By middle of the month, you mean like tomorrow.
I was looking at the wrong, I highlighted a different thing. It's coming on the 6th. It's coming to Screambox, which I think means you can
kind of interesting.
Rent it on Amazon. It's a subscription service. I'm still very
I'm probably paying
by
for
what
it.
Screambox is.
There's a good chance I'm paying for it. I don't know what it is, but there's a good chance I give money
this
for
one, it. This one really has some strong Ghost Watch vibes to me, where it's a conversation, it's like an interview on television between a guy who's like overseeing the debate, an arbiter, who between this dude who leads a cult and the guy who's trying to debunk him, and then like crazy shit starts happening, is what I got from the trailer. I think I'm choosing this primarily because the trajectory I assumed this was on when I started watching the trailer and the trajectory I was on when I finished watching the trailer varies so wildly. And I did think that it actually was a pretty cool, like, 2 minutes of film. It's all in black and white and set in what appears to be, like, I don't know, 1960s, 70s, mm-hmm. sometime around
the description
Penny
of the video
out.
Says 80s, but yeah.
Okay, 80s. I don't know why they were filming in the black and white at that point.
What language does it remind me? It's not English, right?
No, I believe it's in Spanish.
Yeah, it's Spanish.
In Spanish, okay. Couldn't remember.
So, I don't know. I think it looks very intriguing.
Yeah.
Kind of a hard one to access, but we'll see if this one gets any additional buzz and continues to be on the radar.
This one looked, I don't know, it seemed too art housey to me to
I think that's a very possible direction.
Hey, you know me, though. I'm always the one who chooses the art house things.
Yeah.
Mark's an art house goon. Also, let's talk about this. Overall, pretty weak month. Yeah.
Yeah.
December's
always kind of weird.
That's true.
Yeah, it's like
but
the,
there's
where,
always
you,
a
where
good
you stash the Christmas movies and then the stuff that, like, wasn't timely enough to make it out on time. Like the things that you said would be out in the fourth quarter and now you just got to dump it before it's while it's still on your books.
Now, Mark, let me ask you this. We didn't include Violent Night on our list. Is that because that's more action in your view? That's the David Harbour.
Yeah,
Santa,
I mean, you guys are always
the
welcome to add stuff to the list as well, but no part of that
I never
actually
will.
Said that it was horror to me. It's it not. Seems interesting. I like it. I'm probably going to see it.
Oh, I'm for sure going to see it. It looks
it's
great.
It's horror-ish at best. It's horror-ish-ish.
The closest it gets is probably just like it's elevated gore action, right?
I mean, speaking of that, though, there's a movie that is coming out that is on the list called Christmas Bloody Christmas, and that's a Joe Bagos joint that looks
that's this one. Okay.
Similar to the last movie, I think, that he did, which was VFW, which we reviewed on this podcast, and I think all of us
and
at
all
least
liked,
found
I think.
Some merit, yeah. too. It looks like this movie will be very similar to VFW. Like, the vibes and the
which
direction
means it fucking rocks.
Look to be the same, so I am on board for that one.
This is the one about the robot Santa assassin?
Yes. Well, yeah. You're yeah. adding assassin,
I
mean, in, but yes.
Sure.
Well, why
a
else
dysfunctional,
did they create
the robot
like,
store Santa Claus.
Correct.
Maybe yeah. I didn't pay enough attention to this trailer. I thought the CIA made it to assassinate people on Christmas Eve.
That
without
would be
suspicion.
A hell of a thing. I'm not
going
to call
you
wrong.
Did
you
watch
wrong.
A different trailer? And if that's
fan
the actual
theory.
Plot of the movie, I like it
more.
Fan theory.
As well.
I mean, spin it in, however. I don't care.
Whatever the origin like, story of the android Santa who now kills people. It's a prequel to Futurama, I take it.
Maybe.
Yeah, it seems like.
I just wanted to mention that because we're talking about holiday stuff.
Oh,
and
so that's not your Dark Horse pick.
No, okay. I mean, no. For the record, that's my top one.
That looks like a banger
to
me.
Oh, shit.
Yeah.
Yeah, dude.
Yeah, that looks like a banger. That's not my top one, but I just wanted to make sure we mentioned it. It sounds like it wasn't going to go under the radar.
Before
so.
We move on from it, it comes out on the 9th and it is on Shudder. Yeah. It's a Shudder exclusive.
Well, my Dark Horse was Mr. Creep. Which I kind of thought would be a Mark pick for a Dark Horse. This is a found footage movie. I don't know what
scary.
They're content creators who discover like a serial killer, previously undiscovered footage of a serial killer who killed a bunch of people and then themselves go missing. And it's a like true found footage movie in that we are watching the footage of what happened to them, I think, is what happens in this one. And it looks well put together. It looks really good.
Yeah, I mean, ultra micro budget, which isn't necessarily a bad thing or a good thing in any direction, but they're clearly just trying to put some stuff together. It's a good Dark Horse pick because it could go in a yeah. bunch of different directions. I could very easily see this being a dumpster fire of a movie, and I also could see it becoming one of those ones that kind of sticks to your ribs a little bit. So
yeah.
I agree. No, that's a good one.
The video footage of the serial killer, like the interviews with the serial killer, looked really creepy to me. Just the right tonal quality.
It's a solid mask and it's a creepy doll. And those two things together generally are enough to make a pretty good horror movie.
So that's my Dark Horse. Jake, what about you?
I went with The Apology, which is coming out, I think, just streaming on the 16th. There might be a limited theatrical, but it's going to come out on Shudder and maybe
this
somewhere else. I'm not sure if it's
this
exclusive.
Looks pretty good too, kind of psychological.
Yeah, so the reason I'm picking this one is because it looks beautiful from a technical standpoint. The trailer had several shots that kind of knocked my socks off, and that's a good sign, but it's definitively one of those that's small cast, kind of like fishbowl style. It's taking place on, I'm not sure if it's like Christmas Eve, Christmas holiday, right? Someone who has suffered some sort of tragedy is, I think, going to be hosting folks, and her estranged brother comes and shows up unannounced, right? So horror will ensue, and if this is good and if this goes in a strong direction, you could have some like really tense dread, and I could see it going in a direction that hits like The Invitation did, maybe?
I think,
but
this is a great...
It could also fall flat. Like, it might just... people are going to have to carry it. A very, very short cast list is going to have to carry it, and we're going to have to wait and see if that actually happens.
Here's why I'm very hopeful for it. The main person who's going to have to carry it, the woman to whom something tragic happened, is Anna Gunn.
Anna Gunn.
Who I think she's such an underrated actor. She's really, really good, and the internet kind of fucking hated her because the character of Skyler White on Breaking Bad was a buzzkill.
Is that real?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. She got.
So
she
that's
got,
a good
like,
sign.
Yeah, because she did a really good job portraying a character who was correct, more like...
who didn't want to distribute meth to teenagers at all times.
Yeah, whose husband was a psychopath.
Yeah,
the internet really genuinely hated Anna Gunn for a
That's
while.
That's really kind of funny and sad at the same time.
But it's not only Breaking Bad. She was also incredible on Deadwood. She's awesome, and I very much trust her to carry this movie.
Yeah, so we'll see what happens. Like, it's going to take a bit for this to have the style of legs that will make this movie stick with you. But if it does, it could be a really, really strong entry. So here's to hoping.
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. Well, that's going to take us into what we're most jazzed up about. Mark, what's your top one pick?
Well, I already mentioned Christmas Play. Christmas is probably my favorite. It's the seasonal pick for December, but I'll throw two more onto the fire here that were in the running. So first off, Troll came out at the beginning of the month. That's
Hell
on Netflix.
Yes.
It's not Troll Hunter, which is the one that I want the most to be recreated, but...
Oh, it doesn't need it.
It is a very similar movie about at least one troll rampaging through Norway and the military response of the government, which sounds fucking fantastic.
Yeah, this is going to be more like Kaiju Mayhem almost.
It looks great, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. If the Norse country produced a Kaiju
right.
movie,
which
is exactly what you're getting.
Great mashup.
Yes.
So, yeah.
So that's on Netflix. And then the other one also on Netflix is White Noise. I didn't pick this one just because it's such a, like... tonal mismatch with the season. It's not really what I'm looking for at this point, but yeah. It's Adam Driver and Greta Gerwig and Don Cheadle in like this weird summer horror comedy about like a near apocalypse for this town, or at least like a region. There's a chemical fire that's burning and causing people to evacuate, and he's like stuck with his family trying to get out through these clogged roads and stuff. That seems highly lovable.
Yes.
And I think the vibe I'm going for right now. Give that to me in like 4 months.
This is an adaptation from a book, but the screenplay was written in part by, and it was directed by Noah Baumbach, and that is such a weird vibe for this like horror comedy. It's going to be very strange.
Enlighten me who Noah Baumbach is. That's not a name that I have in my...
He's a very strange indie director. The thing you'd probably know him most for is he was like the main writer of The Life Aquatic. But he's like Fantastic Mr. Fox. He's worked, you know, with that whole crew.
So a lot of Wes Anderson exposure.
A lot of Wes Anderson stuff, but like his own stuff. He did like De Palma, Marriage Story was him.
Oh, okay. So not his first go around with Adam Driver either.
Definitely not his first go around with Adam Driver. He's also like just a very unique writer and has a strange voice, I'd say, and is pretty critical to a lot of Wes Anderson's vibe.
Okay, I like that. I love Wes Anderson movies, and I love Adam Driver, so that's why I chose this.
Yeah, I mean, it looks really good. I don't know that I've seen Greta Gerwig as an actor that much. She's
no, me neither.
A good director,
that was another note that I had too. But like, whatever, I'll give her a shot. Why not?
Yeah, for sure. She's clearly very capable.
Even if she
of...
sucks at acting, like I feel like she'll come off the set and then provide some notes on how to shoot a scene. And make the movie better overall anyway. So,
absolutely.
Whatever. She's a good locker room actor, you know? A real grinder. A real gym rat.
This is too much.
Well, look, I picked, I don't think it's any surprise the one I picked. I picked Freeze, which is coming out towards the end of the month on VOD. This is the one that...
The Lovecraft one?
It's a very clearly, if not an adaptation of, then it's extremely inspired by and paying homage to At the Mountains of Madness, the Lovecraft story.
I mean, they mention, there is a line in the trailer of, those mountains are full of madness, or those mountains have madness in them, or whatever.
It's about a story of an Arctic ship that gets trapped in the ice, and then they go to a weird cave and get assaulted by weird fish people. Like, at least that, it shares a lot of plot points with At the Mountains of Madness.
This movie looks fun. Like it is one of those that would be amazing to watch at a film fest. And I'm not just mentioning that because I believe it won the H.P. Lovecraft Film Fest like Audience Choice Award. But
it
you
did.
Can
yeah.
see why, I guess, is what I'm saying. Like the way this sticks together is just, I think I would recommend actually watching this trailer, I think, because I don't think this movie would be for everyone. But there's a certain element of like shoddiness to how this all works that I think is really interesting looking.
So that's the part that I don't like about it. If you're going to make a Lovecraftian movie, I don't like the weird... You either do it with zero budget and you use your imagination how to not show things and like rely on your performances or whatever.
The void.
Or you go the other route and you give the Guillermo del Toro treatment to it and throw as much fucking money as you can.
Well,
to,
I'm
like,
interested to see how this,
is.
If
so,
you put this in the middle of that continuum, interested to see how
right,
that works.
I don't want the middle of that continuum.
Have you seen the, have
I want
you seen
the
what
edges
happens?
Of that continuum.
Have you seen what happens at the middle? Have you seen it?
I will say this trailer did suffer a little because I saw this trailer around the time I saw that Guillermo del Toro released the like 45 seconds of footage he made for his like, have you seen the CG concept art storyboarding for an At the Mountains of Madness movie?
No.
I was going to ask you that. I feel like that's been in the works for 10 years and we haven't seen anything.
He's never gotten anyone to finance it.
And he's going to go mad making it.
Mark, have you seen this clip?
Autobiographical.
Yeah. No, I haven't seen this.
On social media, I'll link you guys, and I'll maybe put it in the show notes, but it's really interesting. It's really fucking cool. Lucky. It's like 45 seconds of, you know, not good CG, but like not terrible looking either, but like animated CG storyboarding.
Yeah, it's like the proof of concept stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's really fucking cool. This movie suffered a little because it's not that, but it is very, it looks very good.
I mean, my final take on it, which is weird, my final take on the trailer is that I think this would go over really well if we were like having pizza and beers together and like watching it.
This might be a great one. Yeah,
that seems like
a post-omnibus viewing.
I'm not saying we should do that. I'm saying we could do that.
Well, we probably won't have a better idea. We never do.
While we're talking about this, there's an episode of the Cabinet of Curiosity called Pickman's Model, which is basically Guillermo del Toro doing H.P. Lovecraft things.
I mean,
it's a different director.
I've only just begun.
Well, Pickman's Model is like the fifth episode. So
we also really have to talk about the Flanagan news. I gotta catch up with
you guys.
Yes,
we do.
We're gonna do a whole thing.
We're gonna do a whole thing.
I've only begun that too.
Okay.
This is what happens when we don't record for multiple weeks in a row.
Yeah, which also means I just like don't get to hang out with you guys for multiple weeks. Turns out.
I'm going crazy over here. Anything else we want to
highlight? Well, Jake hasn't given his top
one. I can give my top one.
Oh, yeah. You want to?
I mean, mine's not going to be any surprise to you guys either. I am happy with the lack of overlap here. We'll also say that this is not officially coming out until the very start of January, but it's getting a limited theatrical at the end of the month. Pale Blue Eye. It's coming out on Netflix. So as you hear this, it'll probably be coming out very shortly.
Linger
on Netflix.
On.
This one is really interesting to me. It's basically the origin story, or like what inspires Edgar Allan Poe, who's played by Harry Melling. You'll either know him as Dudley Dursley in the Harry Potter films, or the thespian in Ballad of Buster Scruggs. Mark is raising his hand, which is not helpful.
What a weird move.
Yeah.
I just had it when you were done with your thought. I had a question.
Okay, ask it.
Why are there so many movies about Edgar Allan Poe?
Dude, he's such a cultural icon. It's funny. Like
I get that, but there aren't any movies about Hemingway. You know,
there are movies.
There are so many.
I think it's more interesting to have a movies about Edgar Allan Poe than Hemingway.
But also,
Hemingway is also fucking fascinating.
I'm not saying he's not fascinating, but I'm saying he is. The horror mixed with.
I have a whole thing. I have an idea. I have a reason for
you. Okay, bring it in. Yeah.
One, Mark Twain was kind of a dickhead. He was like just a little.
Mark Twain's a bad example. Ignore Mark on that one.
Hemingway, pretty much every Western for 100 years has been essentially about Hemingway, the strong, silent type. He's kind of you don't want to make a movie. If you make a movie about that, it's pretty much just a guy sitting in silence.
He's an archetype
to death.
At this point.
That's a Western movie. Edgar Allan Poe was a weirdo, and movies about weirdos are interesting.
I mean, I guess, but like. We have The Raven. We have that one that came out like two months ago that was like 1886 or whatever the fuck. It was just like a year. There was Edgar Allan Poe in the movie. Like all of these movies have Edgar Allan Poe
has his
as
own
a character.
Verse. He has like his own universe
about
him rather than his works.
But so he has his works as well that are all separate. I mean, they're like the Fall of the House of Usher is coming out in March or whatever.
I cannot wait.
It's going to be so good. But we have all of Poe's works, and then we have like a thing where Poe is just has evolved into this like G.I. Joe individual that also is within horror universe, and they make movies about him.
I'm
the culture
for it,
does
man.
This every 10 years
it's
or so.
So weird.
It was Abe Lincoln a little bit ago. There were like five different things about Abe Lincoln fighting vampires and then zombies and then
werewolves. That was just there were two movies that came out simultaneously. But yes.
It's weird. That's one of those where I think that coattails were written. Either way, this looks really interesting to me. Basically what happened, you have Christian Bale, who is playing someone who's investigating murders at West Point, and there's a cadet there, played by Harry Melling, like I mentioned, who is Edgar Allan Poe as a young person enrolled at the
Great
U.S. Army Academy.
Too.
Ensemble cast, I don't have the list up, so I won't go into all of it. This movie is set up to be awesome. I'm just hoping that it doesn't kind of like sludge by at a glacial pace. That's my one concern.
Judging by all of the other Edgar Allan Poe movies, it's going to be kind of sludgy.
But sludgy doesn't necessarily mean bad.
I was just using your words. It's going
to
be bad.
You think it's going to be bad?
I think it's going to be pretty bad.
I'm hoping it's going
to
be good.
It's going to take me until March to see this thing, though. Because, like, wife to go to the, like, movie theater
we can't
with me and
see
watch
it.
A movie. Yeah.
It's a weird one for me to select, and I had a bit of an internal debate about whether I could because, like, I'm not going to be able to see this and weigh in on it for the omnibus. Like, it is coming out for us.
Well, best case scenario, it comes out after we're recording the omnibus anyway, so.
Yeah.
December time frame, it comes out on the 23rd.
Which is before.
If
it's at the Flicks, like,
I'll put it this way. My wife would happily go to this with me, but I'm not using the limited capital I have to get her to go see movies in the theater with me on this movie.
You got to Jedi mind trick her into asking you to go to it. That's what you got to do.
Yeah, this doesn't seem like a
that would be
a
such a tremendous amount of power to get, one, my wife to want to see this movie, and two, to want to go to the theater
like,
to see
if
this
movie. If I can
movie.
Manipulate her that hard, this isn't the thing I'm manipulating her toward.
Also, that's a whole weird rabbit hole I don't want to go down.
It's a superpower I have. I want to see Henry Melling movies. Is that his name?
Yes.
Harry Melling.
Harry Melling. I thought I said it wrong.
Anything else? Now we can get to your point, Mark. Anything else we want to talk about?
So there's a Tilda Swinton
The Eternal Daughter
that I'm not wanting to talk about, but it
doesn't look good.
I had almost the same note. I have zero desire to see this, but it's intriguing because Tilda Swinton, it's like a perfect fucking, to me, her as a physical actress is perfect for what they're setting up here.
Yeah, this is an Ouroboros of a film. It's a fully self-contained cinematic like experiment that
A24
exists over there. In
you
the
beautiful bastards!
I was just tempted to rewatch Lamb again the other week. I might do that.
I still haven't seen Lamb, and it is getting
more unacceptable.
I'm pretty sure you have to watch it by the end of the year.
It was my recommendation to you.
No, I know. And I could actually give a shit about that. I know I have to contractually or I'm like kicked off the podcast, but I could give a shit. It's the fact that my grandparents have watched it and talked to me about it.
That's strange.
That I just, like, I have to. And for some reason, like, it never makes the cut. There's too much shit to watch.
I think that's the
problem. There's paralysis of choice.
That's fair.
Right now.
And when that happens, I just go to Ballad of Buster Scruggs again.
Well, now you can add the first episode of Cabinet of Curiosities.
Yeah,
basically it's the same thing.
Anyway, the other one I want to talk about is Float. Kind of looks okay.
You think so?
You
think so?
The supernatural parts of the
movie looks like garbage.
It looks a lot less bad than I was expecting.
Float was the movie that I was the highest on before watching any of the trailers, and then the lowest on after watching all of the trailers.
I'll kind of agree with Mark on that one.
That plummeted so hard. They have really cool marketing materials out there.
They do.
Then not a good trailer.
I mean, the trailer, I didn't think the trailer was, the movie might be better than the trailer. And I don't mean this to be like, don't get me wrong, this doesn't seem like it's going to be an awesome film, but it could be pretty fucking fun.
Why is it coming out
in December?
Very strange. I mean, that's not. I don't think it has anything to do with the movie. It just like
for
got this, shuffled around.
Yeah, it just seems like some sort of a failure.
Southern Hemisphere homies who have summer in the December months, you know.
Yeah. Well, I mean, sure. I can't argue with that.
Kicked to the end of the calendar. We said we were going to release it this year.
This just got fucked administratively, probably. Yeah. Whatever.
Unomas, which is the leech, doesn't look, honestly, if I'm being real with you guys, doesn't look that great, but
we are
Jeremy Gardner fans on this. We did do The Battery not too long ago.
Love it.
This is his next film.
Yep.
I think he's done a few, obviously he's done a few since.
Is this
the
one even coming out
leech,
on VOD?
I think so.
Yes.
It was not clear to me that it was.
It
the only thing I could find was a Blu-ray release. It might have a video on demand like streaming thing in January. I truly couldn't find where it was being distributed. So it is a little vague, but you are going to be able to see it in December if you are so determined to see it.
And this one is a, like, he is working through his feelings about his Christian upbringing, it seems like, with this movie.
Yeah, this is a religious psychological thriller.
Yeah, which, like, I don't have any complicated feelings about religion that I need to work through. I'm pretty clear on where I stand.
Yeah,
yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, this is one of those that could just, like, not be for
you. This is not where our podcast
but,
shines.
I mean, but Jeremy Gardner's going to be in it. It has Graham Skipper, who he's worked with on a lot of his stuff, too. I will probably watch this because, like Mark mentioned, we have a bit of a history with his films, and I support the work that he's doing. And from an indie horror perspective, I think that he makes interesting and oftentimes thought-provoking stuff. So
absolutely.
Yeah. But I agree with your point also wholeheartedly, Jack. Like, if he's working through some shit, great. Perfect
good
from
him.
An artist standpoint.
And good for other people dealing with the same thing. Yeah.
It's not going to resonate for me.
Me neither.
And that's okay. But yeah. I'll watch it and like I might not have a reaction. Whatever.
Yeah. I mean, I still like The Exorcism of Emily Rose a lot, and that has some deeply Christian imagery in it.
That's actually a good movie. Though.
Yeah, I'm not saying that I can't, that something that deals with Christian subject matter can't resonate with me. I'm just saying
that's the point I was just trying to clarify for the listener. I know that about you.
I think it's more of an exorcism thing. The Exorcist thing. I've watched the movie The Exorcist a number of times now, obviously, because we do what we do. And it continues to be, like, interesting.
The Exorcist?
The Exorcist, yes. The one.
Roars. Yeah, I can't even say it the way you just said it. It's weird.
And it's, like, it's a good horror movie, but that struck such a deep chord with people when it came out, and even people, like, when we watched it for the first time when we were in middle school who were raised religious, that just doesn't resonate with me. I'm able and willing to recognize that it's, like,
well put together and creepy,
but it's not gonna hit me.
There are many reasons for that.
Yeah,
but I agree with what you're saying.
Yeah,
I used The Exorcism of Emily Rose example because I saw that in high school on a date with a woman who I was dating, and she was raised very, very Catholic, and there was a bunch of stuff in there that she like freaked out at that I was not impacted by at all, and I still thought the movie was scary and good.
Well, but I mean, and that's an interesting one because it's specifically also about like the legal side where they're specifically stripping out all of the religious arguments.
We gotta review that fucking movie.
Well, we tried a while ago and it fell through. We were gonna do Grace Under Fire or whatever, that segment that we talked about briefly that never manifested as anything.
That was like 4 years ago.
Yeah, I know. I watched
it. You made that sound like it was 6 months ago right there.
Yeah.
Time
yeah,
is
we
an illusion.
Recently.
It is.
Recently,
you know
I've
is.
Just been trying to actually get any episodes out at all. So.
Hey, before we move on, and I realize I just said that the last one was this. But I'm a little surprised neither of you are elbowing me out to talk about Buzzcut, which is a Kiwi.
Oh.
Kiwi B-horror. I don't know.
It seems fine.
If you want a B horror movie, Buzzcut's the one for the month. There you go.
It didn't grab me.
Okay.
Maybe that's just because they put too many bad jokes in the trailer, but I don't know.
It is the B horror movie of the month. It's very explicitly trying to be low budget, schlocky. It's an apron.
Now I
want to
see a remake of Jerry Seinfeld's B movie, but horror.
But
what's the deal with honey?
How come there are no beekeepers in horror, you know? Why haven't we talked about this?
There's
also Linnea Quigley's in it, and she's featured on this podcast before, so that's cool.
Yeah.
Sure has.
There you go.
Good tie.
Feature presentation.
Good bow. Tied up.
I like to tie bows on things, especially this time of year. Let's talk about Sweeney Todd.
Over at ADCHorror.com this week, we watched 2007's Sweeney Todd, The Demon Barber of Fleet Street. This was a pick from Patreon member TJ. TJ, thank you very much again. Boys, I'm curious about your previous history with this movie, because I'd never seen this one.
I seen it once, and I've seen the Office episode bunch of times.
Now, I have, however, seen Sweeney Todd, the theatrical production at the Idaho Shakespeare Festival, and I got to tell you, that kind of blew me away. That was great.
I mean, that would be, that's, okay.
Yeah, I would love to see this in,
all right, guys.
In actual theater.
Yeah, that's the setting for this.
Yeah,
that's
keep it on Broadway, guys. Keep it off my screen.
Needless to say, I hadn't seen it.
And
look,
seen,
I mean, this is no secret.
Of it?
We don't, knew the broad strokes of what this was about, but I have not seen a production of it, and I had not seen the film.
Okay. Have you read the Penny Dreadful comic? Because I went and read it afterwards.
From the 1970s.
As a big, big reader, yes.
It's cool. It's short. It's like 2 pages. It's fun.
Would you recommend it then? It's 2 pages. I think I could do 2 pages.
If you're into the kitschy, like Penny, do you have any idea what the Penny Dreadful vibe is at all? I think it's, if you like that stuff at all, it's very fun. That's where the character was created.
Okay, I'd probably give it a shot.
I mean, the funny thing is you're like trying to sell him on something that's 2 pages
long.
Yeah,
like, I think I could give 2 pages
of anything
a try. I will read
anything for 2 pages, no matter what it is.
Really?
And Penny Dreadful's like fun. It's a cool thing to be aware of.
Yeah.
What's the worst that can happen in 2 pages? Don't actually answer
that.
We don't have much of a history on this podcast with musicals. So let's throw that out there. Yeah, there aren't a billion musicals in this genre, but it's there. I would not say that we have.
We've talked about Repo, the genetic opera, before.
Was that a full episode though?
No. Yeah.
That was you and I had to do it. We lost.
Jake, yeah, so like that.
We talked about Little Shop of Horrors not too long ago.
A little bit.
It's weird we haven't reviewed that yet.
There's some stuff out there.
Well, I mean, the big one that we're not mentioning right now. You have it on vinyl.
Oh, Rocky Horror.
All the time. I mean, Rocky Horror is
We've done a full
review.
That's
the top of the mountain.
You were so cagey about that. I didn't know where you were going.
Yeah, that's the top of the mountain. And then we just haven't gone too far down to anything else.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, it's there's 6 good ones. And I'm sure more than that.
I'm sure there's more than that.
I liked Repo, the Genetic Opera, better than I liked Moulin Rouge or any of those movies.
100%.
What? No, hold on. No. I don't sign off on this. Moulin Rouge is great.
Moulin Rouge is not great.
I'm a Baz Luhrmann guy.
We have had this argument on this podcast too many times for me to allow this. Right
I
now.
Would rather watch.
No, we've
Repo,
never had this.
Genetic
we've
opera.
Never had the argument of Repo,
Bull,
the Genetic Opera.
Correct.
Versus
but
Baz
I Luhrmann. Talking about whether Moulin Rouge.
It's
is
a
good
similar
or not.
Vibe to Moulin Rouge in that they're both very bad and they both have painted backgrounds and they're both shitty musicals. But I would rather watch.
That is the best possible. connective tissue you could have selected.
I would rather watch Repo the Genetic Opera 2 different times before I watched any Baz Luhrmann movie.
Jesus Christ.
2 different times.
Yeah, it's like Repo the Genetic Opera and The Cabinet of Dr. Caligari are both the same because they have painted backgrounds.
Yeah.
In that way, yeah.
yeah.
Good Lord.
In the ways I said, those movies are similar. You got to give it to me.
Yes, true.
You got to hand it to him.
You really nailed it. Like I said, I've seen this movie once, I don't know, whatever. How old is this movie?
2007.
So yeah. 12 years ago when it came out on Blu-ray, I saw it. I probably got it from Redbox.
Yeah, well, TJ picked this movie, and I didn't ask him to do a 30-second plot synopsis because I didn't know this was the one we were watching until last night, and he picked it 8 months ago, maybe.
Just be real. You were too ashamed to admit. To go back there and be like, we're getting to your movie now.
Especially, yeah. One, I definitely wasn't going to like email him and be like, can you do it in the next 10 hours?
Now do
You've
work.
You've had 8
exactly,
months. I need
exactly.
you to do it right now. I definitely wasn't
exactly.
going to do that.
If you,
I thought, guys, I thought this was our strategy all along to save this one for Christmas times because it's kind of like snowy and dark. And
that
glum,
is
and
what happened. That is,
also
that
happened
is
to
what
have
happened.
A cruise ship. Bermuda Triangle movie still left on the list, and that was just that was separate. That was the thing we didn't consider.
We don't have to do that movie right now.
I mean, we do. That's a good movie.
I'm not saying it's not
a good movie.
We're going to talk about it next week.
I said I thought it was interesting.
There's a few good scenes in it.
Okay, we are doing a 30-second plot synopsis. We're going to go with
loose.
The order
we
Jake
are loose,
first,
you guys.
What? Jake first, and then okay. Mark, and then Jack. 10 seconds each. We're gonna
sing
self-police
it,
on this.
I'm not singing it.
You have to sing it.
There's only so far I can go.
Bar, hopefully on the goddamn clock. It's gonna sing start it. When Jake starts. This is gonna be a goddamn nightmare.
He's gonna sing it.
Benjamin Barker / Sweeney Todd arrives back in London after having been imprisoned and basically shunned off shores for the last 15 years. He's trying to find his wife and daughter that he was taken away from by the nefarious judge.
He opens a barber shop above a meat pie shop, and he starts killing people and dumping them down. She turns the people into meat pies and becomes popular.
And then the meat pies, that kind of backfires. Eventually the judge does come in and he kills the judge, but then he accidentally also killed his wife, who was a beggar woman hiding out in an asylum, and then a little boy slits his throat for some
time.
Reason.
We got through most of
it.
There's
okay.
a lot of twists. Lots of twists.
Just to be clear. Speaking of which, it was really good timing that we watched this now. Did you guys watch the Sunny podcast about
I listened to it.
Cometh?
Yes.
No.
It's really interesting because they actually had Lin-Manuel Miranda on to talk about like the writing of a musical. And they go deep into Sondheim, and Sondheim wrote the original Sweeney Todd.
Yeah, and you're also bearing the lead that they had the actual guy who composed most of the music for Nightman Cometh as well, Corman, whatever his name is.
Yeah.
Interesting.
It's a really good listen. And it was really interesting to listen to that like 2 days before I watched Sweeney Todd.
Yeah, there was a weird amount of Sondheim talk on that episode.
It's just like Charlie Day and obviously Lin-Manuel Miranda, who was like very, he was like a protege of Sondheim, but it's very, their brains work differently, especially Charlie Days, who has no like formal theater training. And he, when he's just like sitting there blinking,
seemingly no formal musical training whatsoever
at all. Yeah. But he's like, he's sitting in the podcast. He's just there plinking around at the piano, and he's explaining like what he understands Sondheim to be, and writes like what sound to me like dead on Sondheim vibes.
Yeah,
it's just
well,
because
he's aping the Into the Woods or whatever, which is the other big Sondheim one. But they did, the part I liked was he was like, "Wait, is this the key it's in? Dung 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 dung. No, it's not quite that. Dung 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 dung. There it is." He's just like
he's
plinking random keys
guy.
On the piano until he finds the right key.
Yeah. I mean, he's that makes total sense to me, right? Like, there's people who do it by the book, and then people who do it by the heart, man.
Yeah, for sure. And he's definitely a by the heart guy.
Man.
Well, and the people who do it by the heart eventually write the book is the thing that I think ultimately it works out to be. But, I mean, whatever. Secondary tangential listening, that is a good episode to go back and.
Great. Also, Mark, plug. I just, one more for the listener who is screaming, the other big Sondheim one, I'd say before Into the Woods is West Side Story. He wrote the book for.
Did Sondheim do the music part of that?
Leonard Bernstein wrote the music, and he wrote the lyrics, is my understanding. Because,
it was like, and Sondheim and Bernstein.
Bernstein essentially raised Sondheim. Like, he was also a protege situation.
And they wrote together for a long time.
A long time.
I am not a theater nerd, you guys. Just,
Joseph,
just
it might
so
surprise
you know,
all of our listeners to hear, and none of us are.
Just to be clear, I do not know how these people are related at all.
It's
I don't know what a major chord is or
I
how to resolve
I'm the
into
one
a minor
on this
seventh.
Podcast that might know the most about the theater world, and that's a pretty damning indictment of the cultural literacy of our show.
Whatever, we're not big on musical theater. It's fine.
Yeah.
And here we are reviewing the Demon Barber of Fleet Street. It sucked. The musicianship is terrible.
I do. You know what is interesting about Sondheim? What I really do like is in the best Sondheim songs, like what I like about it and what drives me about it is also what I like about Eminem. Like, just the scansion and the weird rhymes are not in the places you expect them to be, and they're like forcing their way outside of the rules you expect.
In this movie, right?
A little bit in this movie. There's a few of the songs in this movie.
Yeah, I mean, so, okay, let's stay on format and do, what is this movie? What in the fuck subgenre of this genre does this genre
Oh, Jesus,
into?
Mark.
Musical. Foreign. No, it's not foreign.
I've been drinking since, like, one.
It is, like, one for me. So, it's like,
what
10.
Did you say? You said foreign
musical.
Musical.
Yeah. I also said foreign, but it's not foreign.
It's not really. It's, like,
it's just
London.
set in London.
It's Tim Burton flick.
But it also, it's a Broadway play, so it's kind of not. That's it. It's a slasher. If it's anything, it's a slasher.
Yeah, but I don't think it is. Like, that's what I was toying with.
It's not a slasher.
No. It's a slasher. I mean,
there's a lot of slashing.
It's not a slasher.
Slitting.
There's a
it's
lot
a
of
slitter.
It's a slitter.
We're not adding it to the list.
This movie has more blood splatter in it, like blood fountain splatter, than any movie we've reviewed since Army of Darkness.
Probably. There's true. A lot of it.
Yeah. So I think there's a pretty strong argument made, frankly, for slasher.
There's not.
Aside from the fact there's no mask.
There's not a strong argument.
There's no mask. There's no morality tale for the slashing associated with the slashings whatsoever.
But that's
wrong. What?
This whole thing is a morality tale.
No, but what I mean
is
the people
just told from the perspective of the guy who's doing the slashings.
The people who get slashed are literally randos who happen upon his barbershop that he's practicing on. It has nothing to do with, like, they smoked weed or they had sex.
I wouldn't argue.
Yeah, but you get the morality thing from, like, if you keep slashing, eventually you'll kill your wife.
That's
not what a slasher is.
That's
the fact that it has a moral message.
Kind of morality.
Which I also disagree
with.
See, but
the killer does enough killing, he learns, man. That's why you need Friday the 13th,
Jason,
part 50.
There's the more you know at the end of every... There's the Doogie Howser crystallization music. Here's what we learned on today's episode. At the end of every Friday the 13th movie.
There's more. There's a lot of slashing, but I think there's more of an argument to call this a splatter flick than a slasher.
Agreed.
Okay, fine. I'm fine with that. Splatter. It's a musical splatter.
Yes, that's
split.
The only reason I don't
splatusical.
The only reason I don't think it's a slasher is because they come to him. He doesn't go to them.
Okay, we're not. Well, we're getting one of dangerously many close reasons to where
it's not a slasher.
Yeah.
It's
yeah.
the only reason it's not a slasher.
That Jesus. Is a lunatic take.
If we were to review the movie The Dentist, are you guys familiar with the movie The Dentist?
I am familiar with the movie The Dentist.
Would that be a slasher?
Much closer, but I also don't
think I
so.
Haven't seen
basically
it, so I can't comment.
The same thing as what's happening.
I'd probably argue no then.
You haven't watched that movie.
That literally just said that, yeah.
Okay.
It's been 15 years since I've seen it.
I've they come to him. He gives him a quick beheading,
Mark,
and then
slasher,
you're usually they
screaming
come
at
to
me
him.
About the fact that slashings happen doesn't make it a slasher. That's usually what you're doing to me. And now I'm having to do it to you. And I've
Wait,
tasted my own medicine,
how, when
and
this
it
ever
is
happened?
Bitter.
What was the movie that I said wasn't a slasher?
I don't remember. It was 100 episodes ago, probably. I just have a very vivid sense memory of you telling me that the fact
you
that they're slashing
think,
doesn't
no,
mean
you
a slasher.
I think you and Jake have had this conversation. This was like an OG, sure. One of the first like written reviews you guys had.
Probably.
And I'm pretty sure I was on Jack's side that it was supposed to be a slasher. This what? Movie is a slasher.
It's not
I
a
might
slasher.
Be talking
it's
about
slasher.
The strangers.
This,
I might be this, talking about the strangers. That's
let's
the biggest
burn
slasher.
Through the subgenres. Took 50 hey. Times longer than it needed to.
We well,
Strangers
we,
is also a slasher.
Jesus
agreed.
Christ.
Yeah. But we have to talk about this movie. Okay. Sweeney Todd. I will say, it does a pretty good job of taking a 3.5 hour long musical and condensing it down into a mildly watchable film.
Into a 2 hour. It took something 3 hours long and turned into something 2 hours long.
That's a big cut. That's a lot of cuts. That's
a lot of cutting.
Yeah, it's true.
Especially when you have to fucking sing everything.
Ooh.
Yeah, that's cut
a,
that.
That song isn't even
that
in
saved
this
you 3
one.
Seconds right there. Cut the oohs. Saves you a lot of damn time.
Well, actually, what they did was they cut all of the chorus out.
I get the feeling that you both did not enjoy watching this movie.
Oh, I did not enjoy watching this movie.
There are parts
of
this movie.
I'm not a musical guy.
I really thought you actually. I think if we watched a good musical, you would like it. I think if we did the actual like Little Shop of Horrors one, you'd be in.
I like the play, and I've seen the movie, and I don't remember my feelings on the movie being all that positive.
So maybe that's one we need to revisit.
Yeah.
Okay, but like my point is, every time we've gone to musical theater with you in actual theater,
oh, it's great in theater. I already said I would love to see this. I would love to see this in theater. I would do
Tom
it.
Tom Ford played Sweeney Todd, and he fucking kills it.
I would do it in a heartbeat. But I think that is a much better. I can get into the musical theater part of it when I'm in the fucking theater. When I'm watching it on a screen in my living room, especially with a raging hangover, I don't
yeah,
want
there,
it.
It.
Okay,
there is, there
okay,
is.
There it is.
It wouldn't have made a difference.
It would have made a big have, difference.
It didn't make
I don't know
it
that you would have liked it, but...
it. Yeah, okay, fine. It might have been more tolerable, but I still would not have crossed the threshold into preference for this as a film.
The problem I wanted to get back on track and now we're not on track. But
that's
whatever.
Your fault.
The problem I have with the construction of this play is that the intro songs are not good songs. All the good songs are buried deep in the like middle third of the movie.
Yeah, it's like the opposite thing that you have with most musicals that I've seen.
Yeah, except where all the
where
bangers
they kind of like tail off.
Yeah, but like Welcome to London or whatever. This is the thing where I don't get what you're talking about with Sondheim. There's not a fucking single rhyming scansion in that entire thing.
Oh,
they're just saying
Tops.
Like, I've been to Thailand and I've been to America
but
I've been to Morocco and those places are fine. But now I'm in London and it's pretty cool.
But that's an example of one of the lines I really like, where Sweeney Todd's parts in that. I don't know the exact words, but when he's talking about how the streets of London are dark and it's actually a really shitty city, and he's kind of like fast talking, that's a really cool breaking down of the ordinary pattern of that song.
There's a hole in the world like a great black pit, and the vermin of the world inhabit it, and its morals aren't worth what a pig could spit, and it goes by the name of London.
Mark, I'm not doing it.
Okay.
I don't know the lyrics.
But that's my point, is even when Johnny Depp comes in with the Sweeney Todd lines and he's like, London is a hole and it's filled with shit and it's
yes!
full of people who are
that
filled
shit's
with
awesome.
Shit.
Yeah.
It's like, no,
I actually thought
awesome.
That was okay.
Okay.
It was
whatever.
Very cool.
I didn't like it. I don't like that song.
I thought
it's
not
that,
good. I thought that breakdown was cool, but it's not like a banger. You want the banger of the song. You want like Time Warp. You want something that pretty early
Time Warp.
Is going to just grab you and not let you go, and it didn't have that to me.
The best song in the movie If we're talking about what the movie does,
thank
right?
you.
Since
there you
we
go.
Haven't gotten there, the there best song in the movie is "A Little Priest." Yeah. Where they're talking about the song where him and Helena Bonham Carter are talking about like what the different professions around London make as far as like a pie goes.
Yeah.
Where it's like you can't, if you make the grocer, he tastes like vegetables. And if you make a priest, it's like they're making like puns off of all
that's
of things.
That's a very good song.
It's yeah, a great song.
I don't
song.
Remember
That was
it.
My favorite song.
I don't even remember it.
Okay, cool. Good talk. You
it
were hungry.
It hurt. It hurt. Physically hurt.
Somewhat obviously, catatonic for most of the movie.
There's a very cohesive visual storytelling element that I think works very well. There's a Tim Burton effect that's on full display here, and it works very well. London looks shitty. The part of London they're in looks shitty. It all looks dark and depressing, and it's cohesive and it
yeah,
works
I
really
mean, this
well.
Is
it contributes to it.
The big bucket of what this movie does right to me is the you know the sets, props, costuming. Like the visual elements of this film are.
We're just, so we're just quickly rapid firing every single thing.
Oh, we can break them
right
all down. Without, no, we can and should. We can and should break them all down. But the big bucket, like I said, of that is
what
this
London
film does
like.
Right. No, not what. Did you listen to what I just said?
I'm trying to make your point marry with Jack's point so that we're not just
what London
by.
Looks like is part of the big bucket of everything in this film looks really good.
Yes.
And we should now talk about those things, right? So London, yes. All of the dingy, dirty alleyways and the way they integrate like what is clearly sets that are, you know, in front of like a green screen with the things they've built. All
I don't
of
know
that
if they actually did much green screen work.
You think it was just
I think they had
like,
sets and then they did CG transitions.
CG transitions. Sets, that's possible, yeah. Probable, I would say.
Probable even.
I don't know what this I don't know what this movie cost. Was this a big budget movie?
Oh yeah. Oh
huge.
Yeah.
Huge.
This was,
I don't know.
This was a biggie when it came.
I mean, I get the ensemble cast like is a bit of the telltale sign.
Also, Tim Burton could basically just like
do whatever he wanted. Yeah, blank check.
$50 million.
This is the same era that
what
he did.
What did this movie net?
$153 million.
Damn. Okay.
In box office plus whatever he made in streaming and distribution. Yeah. This was the same era as when Tim Burton did Charlie and the Chocolate Factory.
I mean, similar era.
That movie fucking sucked. I'll watch this before
that movie.
And
did
it also
not
made
suck.
So much money.
I hated that
Tim
movie.
Burton can just make things and yeah. people just throw money.
You like that movie, Jack?
I don't know if I like it. It does a lot of really interesting things. I think for how weird the original Charlie and the Chocolate Factory is, the new movie doesn't get enough credit for being very, very weird. I don't think it's a great movie. I don't think Tim Burton makes great movies.
He doesn't.
Okay.
That's honestly, that's the piece that I have to factor out of all of this. I don't like Tim Burton movies. So I'm trying to like.
Provide. I love how they look. I love how they look.
And it's also, given how now the most bland movies in the world are superhero movies, it's very fun to go back and watch his Batman and Batman Returns. Those rule just because of the context of our current culture.
It's a very good point. When he did, that was, who was Batman when he did it?
Clooney,
yeah.
It was Clooney?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay. Not Keaton?
Now you're
actually,
confusing.
Yeah. I think it might have been Michael Keaton.
I think you're
Clooney
right.
Came later.
I think you're right.
Yeah, Clooney was nipples Batman.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nips.
You're right. It was Keaton.
The nips and the hips, Batman.
Nips and hips, Batman.
We haven't talked about Sacha Baron Cohen at all.
I mean, he's something the movie does fucking right.
Yeah, it
yeah,
is.
Yeah, he's so fun.
The insertion of him. Was a real. He's the only color this movie has, like both visually and like within all of
and characteristically.
Yeah, characteristically. Thank yeah. you. Like he is the color in this sea of shit of
it's
all
just,
the people in the city
yeah,
of shit.
Yeah, he's like a sudden explosion of purple as Pirelli. He's
it's so good.
Yeah. I also like he does such a good transition from Pirelli to whatever his actual not stage name is. Just
like
the like hard
O'Sullivan
cutoff.
Or something?
Yeah.
Oh
God. Yeah.
Like,
when he transitions,
here's why this is
I don't
gonna,
know what accent
so,
it is.
It's
but.
So good. Yeah.
Dude, King of Barbers and Barber of Kings. That's a good line. So that's one that Sondheim nailed. I'll give him that.
Sure.
But, I think he's the most fun part of this movie.
By an incredible amount.
He's the only fun part of this movie.
And the shave-off is legitimately entertaining.
Yeah.
Where it's him, like, pontificating about, like, he has the Pope's signature from when he shaved him a while ago. And then, like,
it's hilarious.
It's a quick shook, 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 and Sweeney Todd's done.
Yeah.
And he wins.
Yeah. I mean, I like how that scene works too, right? Because you know exactly what's gonna happen, right?
Yeah.
He's over here like doing all of his bombastic stuff and Sweeney Todd just gets down to business.
He's
man.
Just on that leather thing, just sharpening
calm,
or whatever.
Calm as you like.
It's called a strop, Mark.
Yeah, what does this drop do?
So when you are honing a blade like that, there are still, when you sharpen a blade, you start obviously wider grit and go to a much finer grit. When you're done,
ultra fine grit.
When you're done, it's just the finest possible grit. It takes away any burr that's left over. It's still coarse enough to kind of remove a burr, so it's not a honing edge. That doesn't remove any metal, but it just removes any hint of a burr.
Gotcha. There you go. Strop. That's your vocab word for the episode.
Leather strop. What else does it do right? Not that much.
The
kid who plays the guy who's in love with Joanna.
Joanna.
The kid like, who's the... Most recently, you would recognize him from the recent season of Stranger Things.
Would you?
Yes. He plays one.
He looks so much
That's
like...
one.
S- That's one?
Shit. Yeah, that makes
oh,
sense.
Oh, God.
Yeah. He looks so much like Cody Smit McPhee, I couldn't deal with it. It was
oh,
breaking
my goodness,
brain to be
right.
like, Cody
yeah.
Smit McPhee was 10 years
name.
Old when this came out.
Probably
Jamie Campbell Bauer.
Thank you. I mean, I think he's been in quite a bit of stuff, but I, having watched that this year, recognized him from that.
That's a good call.
So...
That's honestly, if you recognized him in that from this, that's an impressive skill. Because
well,
I don't think they.
He looked I mean, more like similar. Cody Smit McPhee
that's 15
in everything.
Years of age, man.
Yeah, he has a very, like, the way his, like, eye socket area is very unique to me. I don't know.
Yeah, he looks like Cody Smit McPhee.
Just to go back to Cabinet of Curiosities for the umpteenth time this episode unnecessarily. We were watching the one that's like the third episode. It's I think it's called Outside. It's the one with the body lotion. Leslie recognized the guy from the movie that we watched a while ago with the guest, the host. Is that what
the
guest?
Host?
It was called the guest.
Oh, the guest, yeah.
The guest,
main
yeah.
guy.
She recognized the main guy from the guest within 1 second as he's nice. Playing like this heavily made up dude on TV. I was like, what is happening? You can recognize someone from like a weird shape of his chin or something. Sorry.
He does look a little like Cody Smit McPhee, Jack.
He looks so much like Cody. It was breaking my brain to feel like I thought it must be him, but then this movie came out like 15 years ago and Cody Smit McPhee's like 20 or whatever.
Yeah.
We can't talk enough about the cast, though. We haven't even mentioned Timothy Spall as the lackey, who he always plays the lackey. But
the
he
Beetle?
Plays it, yeah, Beetle. He plays it really well. He plays Wormtail in all the Harry Potter movies. And, of course, yeah. Alan Rickman hasn't even come up yet.
Alan
he plays
Rickman
Judge Turpin.
Is so villainous. He's so good.
He's, I mean, he's just R.I.P., man.
One like, of cinema's
that dude
best
is,
villains.
That, yeah, that dude is incredible.
Alan Rickman. This is Alan Rickman. Pick up. Bacon. Do not disappoint me.
So fucking good, man. It's actually crazy, like when you watch all like when you watch the movies that have all of these people that ultimately like were in the Harry Potter films together. It's I get it now a little bit, but it's kind of crazy to me that it happened.
Was Johnny Depp in the Harry Potter movies?
No, Johnny Depp was not, but like
Johnny
everyone
Depp,
else was.
Johnny Alan Rickman wasn't.
Yeah, he was. What?
He was the main one.
He's
I know that.
Oh, fuck, he's Snape. I'm an idiot. Shut
Jesus.
Up. Sorry. Jack, edit it out. Edit it out.
We all have
that,
those, Mark.
That,
Cut that. We all have those. We all have those. But like everyone else was.
I forgot about that.
I mean, Helena Bonham Carter, Alan Rickman, yeah. Wormtail. I don't know his name, unfortunately. But he's in like everything.
yeah. Timothy Spall.
They run together. And it makes more sense now. Like I said, I hadn't seen this movie. So I was a little bit surprised to kind of like see that collective. Contemporaneous to those movies.
I also really like the scene when now I can only identify them by the people who they've played in other
That's
things.
That's fine.
Number one goes into the judge's house and Alan Rickman's whole thing is like, I've seen whores from Siam and whores from Egypt and whores from Russia and whores from London.
I will
and
fuck
here
you
all,
all the
books.
Way up.
So you can have all these illustrations of whores. And then he beats him with a staff.
Yeah.
It's great. It's good scene.
Very good. It's
great scene. Love it. Funny. The part where he gets beaten, love it.
It's fun.
Good times all the way down. there is a certain amount of physical horror in this movie that we haven't touched on. From the horror, we haven't really talked about this movie as a horror movie yet. Okay. Probably indicative of what the overall scare effect ranking is going to be. But
well, it's hard for a musical, right? You're never going to be like horrified by it.
I do like the amount of blood splatter, and I do love that they continue to show the shot of the bodies going headfirst down
that's,
the chute.
That's my favorite
and
part.
Absolutely
landing on their head,
harpooning themselves yeah. into the cement.
Landing on the head. Yeah,
that is the best shot in this movie, and they show it over
just
and
the
over
static.
And
yeah,
over
I mean,
and over because
of the montage. Like there's the
kaboom,
the montage of the gurgle, the throat slit gurgle, and then the ching where they fall back
the
and then the head
pedal.
Down. Yeah,
yeah,
that's
so
another,
good.
That's, it is great. That's the last thing I had. And then what this movie does, right, is it's such a specific use of color, right? There's like no color at all. Even when he's slitting people's throats, that red is a
it's
little
muted.
Bit darker.
Yeah.
But when it's on his sleeves, it's so bright.
And
it's so
giallo-esque
stark.
In the way they handle it. Is yeah. The only, that's my comp. Like it's mm-hmm. candle wax.
I just don't think
red Burton... candle wax, basically. It's stark contrast, and I love that. I agree with
it's
you.
It's great.
Does Burton name a movie that Burton has color? I guess Charlie and the Chocolate Factory.
Yeah.
But
Willy Wonka. Yeah, Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. Thank you.
Other than that, even in that case, if you compare it to the original Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory,
there's
way
less
color.
Totally.
Burton doesn't use color in his movies.
That's fine. Yes. That's fine.
Not a bad thing.
Yeah, that's
but,
his
But, like,
style.
That's just his style.
Yeah. Style. Yeah. His exact style.
Which is, it lends itself well to Sweeney Todd and, like, what it is as far as a vision of
just like
pre-
an extremely
or, yes,
goth
the Industrial
kid
Revolution London era.
Well, that's one other interesting thing. This isn't something the movie did, but this is set in, like, the mid-1800s, and it's really interesting to see, like, just how the vibes in places were so different in the mid-1800s. Like, in London, they probably didn't give a shit at all that the American, like, Civil War was burgeoning and about to happen and all that shit was going on. It was just, like, Victorian London.
When
why,
is this
why would they
be?
Give a shit? Like, 1850, 1845?
Oh, okay. I kind of thought it was a little bit later. I thought it was, like, 1870s, 80s. But yeah, I mean, oh yeah, they don't give they whatever.
Why would
they're
they give
independent?
A shit? They wouldn't know. Yeah,
yeah.
But it's really interesting. I found a lot of joy thinking about that kind of stuff.
There should have been like some random like blue coat who punched through the door at one point. It was like, we're winning the war on the Western Front.
It hasn't started. It won't start for 13 years, but we're gonna be winning it.
Yeah. Again, I don't get when this is supposed to be set.
Unbelievable.
We should fight those guys in gray. I don't know what color they're going to wear yet, but...
I think the Union soldiers wore gray and blue.
Blue was the North, gray was the South.
Yes. What are we talking about?
The Civil War.
Why are we talking about the Civil War?
Because we don't want to talk about this movie.
The movie, what the movie does right is the American Civil War.
What the movie does right is it doesn't reference the American Civil War. Except for all of the cut
footage. It's in London. You completely missed me, and I get that I've drank that whole thing of gin, man, but you missed me.
Yeah, you stopped paying attention for like 30 seconds. Yeah, we went off on a thread.
I might have missed more than
Mark
that.
Mark did a whole song about a Union soldier in London pre-Civil War predicting the outcome of the war, and he sang a song about it. It was wonderful.
Okay, whatever. I'm not
It's not in
this.
The 1860s. I've been saying...
It's just nondescript Victorian London. We're not doing this. We're not fucking doing this.
It could be mid-Civil War.
The North wore the blue and the South wore the gray. Like, full stop.
Yeah,
that's why the Blue Jackets are a team name.
Yes, we know. That's what we said at the start, and then you corrected me.
I didn't correct you? What?
Yeah, Mark's wrong, because I said it wrong.
We have
and
to
Jake
move
corrected
on.
Me, but Mark wasn't paying attention to me and confused us.
There's a circle. Did you take some of my gin?
No, but I will.
Oh.
Middle?
What does the movie do middle? What does it do?
Oh, I have, honestly, like, you guys, I don't know, I might get kind of dragged over the coals for this one, but I think, like, it being a musical is something this movie does middle. Like, you're either,
well,
that's going
okay.
to be a for-you thing
so
or a not-for-you thing.
That's
it's
an
choice.
Interesting take, and I want to go into this, because for me, yeah. this is one of the best film adaptations of a stage musical.
I can't have that conversation with you, because I haven't seen the musical.
Oh, that's fair.
You can talk about it.
But I'm also thinking of like you've seen other big budget adaptations like Les Misérables and
yeah.
like
Wait,
West
actually
Side
seen
Story.
Les Mis?
Yeah, for sure.
Oh, okay, I haven't.
And West Side Story, either version.
I've not seen West Side Story.
And like those are not good or fun to watch for all the reasons you said, Jake. Like you like being there. You like watching a stage musical because it's fun.
For
it's
sure.
Stage, it's live.
Yeah. And you think that this elicits that better.
It does a much better job, and it handles the between songs scenes, I think, much better than any other movie musical does. Like, this does a good job getting you to the next song without spending too much time.
It scared me at the beginning because it didn't really take a breath from the songs, and I was hoping that there'd be a slight balance between, like, we are literally
like a little bit of talking amidst.
I want, like, some just, like, give me the fucking movie part, and it got better as it progressed with that balance, I thought.
Yeah.
So that helped me from an immersion standpoint as the film wore on into the part that is more horror, which is actually perfect for the context of what we discuss.
Yeah. And so I think it does a good, like, it's an interesting middle point because, like, you don't need to adapt every musical into a movie. Some things should just exist as different mediums. Like, it doesn't need to be a movie. But this one did a cool job of it.
Say more about that.
Every musical should be a movie. This was mostly I hadn't said anything in a while.
Oh, so you don't actually disagree? You just...
No, of course not. Yeah, of course every musical shouldn't be adapted into a movie.
But, like, the Les Mis one with Anne Hathaway sucked. That was unwatchable. Yeah, that was unwatchable. And even the recent Steven Spielberg West Side Story, like, I'm not a West Side Story fan to begin with, but that movie is hard to watch.
Haven't
that movie's hard
to get
through.
Never watch that.
It's a brutal watch.
I mean, the original West Side Story is pretty good.
Haven't seen that either, though.
It's pretty good, but also a lot of that's nostalgia and just like, and we didn't know, it was the 1960s. We didn't know how to make movies.
Well, and I mean, also the whole snap fighting where you're like snapping your fingers and kicking your legs at the other team, at the Jets or the Sharks or whoever is.
But that's just Sondheim's cool rhythm.
Yeah, I mean, that's true. I actually really like this point. What it does middle is it's a musical, and that's going to polarize it as far as who likes it. And who
like,
I'm
not shitting on this because of, it's a musical. It's just, it makes it a harder thing for me personally to resonate with.
I think there are certain plays that are really fun to adapt into cinema, like Wait Until Dark. Was a really fun one for us to go back and watch.
Yeah.
But it's shoot it the same way they adapt it to the screen the same way you would shoot the play, where it's one fixed camera on one set and there's like two or three shots from like
that's
the street
more of a,
or
more
from
of a fishbowl though.
In this case, the thing I had and what the movie does middle is the scene transitions. When I go to see a big play, like Waitress, or I mean if we were to see this one, right? Like one of the coolest things about seeing all that shit happen on stage
is seeing it happen
is all of the crazy scene transitions.
Yeah.
And like at the Idaho Shakespeare Festival, they do some of that stuff. But like if you go to a big play,
there's
like huge rotating, like massive feats of engineering and like the lighting moves around and changes. And I mean, fucking shit happens. And I think they translate that well enough, and probably as well as you can.
But it's also not that impressive on a movie screen.
No, it's not, because
what
it is here is like literally a cartoon. It's 2007 level CG. It's obviously has a lot of money behind it, but like it's still just the CG that was available in 2007, where you're like flying through alleys and stuff, and like that's cool, and it reminds me of like what you would see on the stage, but without it existing in real life.
No one
practically
built that. Yeah,
that looks bad.
It does. It doesn't.
The only
reason
I think it looks good is because I know they're trying to reference what you would be seeing if you went to a live show.
Yeah. So you're impressed with like the loyalty to the original stage productions, and that's clearly Tim Burton was clearly trying to be very like not change much from Sweeney Todd the play. But it also I'd much rather watch the play. This isn't that fun to watch as a movie.
Well, but to that extent, like, you can't just go watch the play. I can watch this movie whenever the fuck I want, right? It's on HBO. I can't just go watch.
Yeah.
I can't find a single representation of Sweeney Todd, theatrical play.
I bet you could, but I think it's a great,
a High School Musical thing on YouTube.
No, there's a, Mark, the channel Bravo used to be all about recreating stage, like, doing well-filmed stage productions, posting the TV show Bravo or the TV
what
show
happened?
Bravo.
That sounds sounds cool.
It
is
made
that like
absolutely
a, is that like
no money. What's that?
Yeah.
Is that like Screambox?
Yeah.
No, Bravo.
I know what Bravo
doesn't
is.
Don't they now just do like reality shit?
Yes.
Isn't Bravo
Andy Cohen kind of took it over and made a ton of fucking money doing like every reality show that exists.
Is that what that show Below Deck is on?
Yes. That show's kind of watchable. Below Deck Sailing Yacht.
It was a recommendation that was made to us by some friends on the trip that I just got back from, irrelevant to the listener.
But all the Real Housewives stuff, too.
I was shocked at what the description was, because it actually sounds fun.
All the Real Housewives stuff is on there, too, and Hannah watches all of it, and of all the stuff she watches, Below Deck is by far the most watchable. It's pretty compelling stuff.
Perfect. Perfect.
Jesus
Christ. I'll tell you something else this movie did middle.
So loose.
I don't remember how, but this movie got Hannah and I talking about the 1970 version of Scrooge, right? The movie with Albert Finney as Ebenezer Scrooge. And that was interesting. That was a fun discussion. But it led me to learn that Albert Finney, who played Ebenezer Scrooge in that 1970 movie, was 33 years old when he played Ebenezer Scrooge. He was my fucking age when he played Ebenezer Scrooge in the 1970 movie, which, like, to me, I thought the oldest man in the whole world played Ebenezer Scrooge in that movie when I saw it the first time.
There was a lot of makeup,
womp,
I assume.
But woof. He was 33.
It's old for when you lived in Victorian London.
Yeah, dude, You're well
over
past
the hill.
Midlife crisis. Yeah. You were 33 in Victorian London.
Oof. That's all I had in middle.
Let's move on to
what
the
movie does
wrong.
You know what
the music?
You know what? Okay.
I want to go.
The music isn't that good.
The music's not that good. There's like three good
songs. It's
not songs.
That good. We talked about this already.
We talked about this already.
Yeah.
None of us are theatrical nerds or whatever.
Nothing hooked me.
Yeah, the only song that I thought was good, like actually good, was The Little Priest.
And well, I don't know. And see, and you did it, and I don't even know what one that is still.
I mean, I could play it for you.
I don't
you probably
want
enjoyed
you to.
That little. If, assuming
Maybe.
You weren't catatonic. You
there were
it.
There were moments that I liked, and I'm also wanting to insert here that, like, me, us, you're saying it too, saying the music's not that good is an opinion. But in my opinion, it wasn't enjoyable.
Will say the thing that's weird and hard to digest for me is the music, the instrumentation part of it is fantastic. I love listening to just the instrumentation.
I'll agree with that.
Helena Bonham Carter can't sing for shit in this movie.
Nor can Johnny Depp.
No, they both don't sing good.
That's a big part of it. You're right.
They say, and maybe they're doing weird accents and trying to make it, but whatever artistic choices they made were wrong. It sounds like shit. They can't sing.
So I think that's the right take. We've just gotten there. It's the delivery or the way that it ends up feeling. It's not necessarily the music itself.
Yeah.
It hits
I mean, but
wrong.
It is a little bit the music itself.
It hits wrong.
It is a little bit the music itself. Mm-hmm. I feel like with a lot of the other musicals I really like, they have these recurring themes and crescendos that like come back in and motifs that like play out throughout the whole thing.
Yeah.
This has that. It has the reprise of the, I don't know what the name of the song is, but like the
Sweeney Todd theme. Like, the Sweeney Todd theme.
Yeah, the Sweeney Todd theme has multiple refrains throughout the movie, but they never like capitalize. It's basically like a scene transition.
Well, sure. They also
like someone's walking down a flight of stairs. They're playing it. You know, it's not
they
like
cut. They
oh yeah, we have to have. Could this just be like part of how difficult it is to cut this down to this sort of
I think that no I still think that is specific to how the musical itself is written, because that if they're cutting songs that have that, then that's a bigger problem. I don't think they did. I think
they cut the main song that has that main theme.
They did?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, I'm changing my tune. That was a mistake. That's what this movie does wrong. They're idiots. That is a stupid decision.
There's a song that has that as the primary theme of that's the whole tune of the song. They kept
the tell the tale of Sweeney Todd. Ooh.
Yeah.
I was odd. Ooh, that one.
That's not going to come through to the listener, but I understand what you're trying to do.
But you're cutting the chorus, which you kind of have to do because you can't have a chorus in a movie. Choruses don't work in
movies. Mark, from you know that from The Office very well. That is the overture.
Yes, that's the only reason I know the actual lyrics to that song.
And they use that as the overture. But in the original production, there's a song he sings as he's killing his wife and as he's killing the judge, or in between those two, that uses that as the principal melody of the song, where he's talking about getting his revenge and becoming truly Sweeney Todd and losing all track of his old self. And that's
I'm
the
becoming
primary
Sweeney
melody.
Sweeney Todd.
Yeah, it's exactly that. No, but it's really intense and it's really cool and it's really weird that that's not in this movie.
Yeah, they should have. So they should have included that. Because
they used
pretty
it thematically
girls,
throughout. Yeah.
Pretty Girls or whatever. That's such a shitty song.
Well,
and they use it like three times. And
here's what's wrong with this movie. All of the shit between Johanna and her suitor is boring and nonsense, and no one gives a shit. Cut that shit.
Yeah, that's
no one cares.
Part.
No one cares.
It's an important part of the part. Stage play, but you also have a 3.5 hour long stage play. Like, fuck it. Don't have that. I don't care.
If you're thinking about where to cut, I mean, I still feel like this felt long at 2 hours.
It did.
I mean, it just is. Like, 2 hours is a long movie, especially a musical.
Yeah.
But
yeah, the only reason it doesn't feel long is because it could have been 3.5 hours.
Yeah.
You know?
That might be why, right? Like, it felt long to me, but it wasn't egregious. Like, I was not frothing at the mouth at the end of it and being like, that needed to be 30 minutes less.
But going back, like, if you're already cutting songs that are, like, tantamount to the whole story.
Totally, yeah.
Cut other songs.
Cut, yeah, for sure. Honestly, and then make choices about the movie
itself. And I know
the
I Feel You Johanna song is, like, I Feel You Johanna is, like, iconic, and that's what people know from this musical, but, like,
and it's how he finds her. Like, he can't find her unless he sings that song.
But
arguably.
You could do it, Mark. You're a smart filmmaker.
You
could find a way to make it happen. It would.
But no. But I mean, if you're cutting songs, cut the song where she's like looking outside and is like, "Birds fly when it's raining outside, even though there's no blue sky."
Yeah, they could have done another way for him to.
They didn't actually make
her
gander. Give her song.
If I hear one more song about birds and blue skies and rain, I'm gonna freak out.
That's
I feel like
not good.
There's
weird stance.
Yeah. Well, okay. I'm here for
Well, and along those lines,
I'm here for
one
those
of the
weird
other things
stances.
This movie does wrong is, you know what shouldn't happen in a musical? You shouldn't. There are so many bad nitpicks I have in this that like do take me out.
God, I don't have.
And I shouldn't give
so
a shit in
stuff.
in a musical. I shouldn't give even close to enough of a shit about the actual specificness of the world. Right? Like, I shouldn't care, but
I
do.
I didn't.
There were five different times where I was like, this is egregious.
Oh, God. So they're escalated, so we don't need to blow a whistle yet.
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying. And all of that kind of weird, like, it's not even, I don't care about the attention to detail. It's just like, you emphasized the wrong stuff so much in a world where I don't give a shit about the, like, internal logic of this world. But then you made it seem so strange. Ah, that
it's like
weird.
It is a very strange mixture of cartoonishness and realism.
Yeah.
That kind of creates this vortex where it's very easy to nitpick, but then
a musical should not be easy to nitpick. It just shouldn't matter.
I hear what you're both saying, but I didn't have the same feeling. And maybe it was the context under which I watched this.
The wildly hungover.
Yeah.
You just wanted it to be over.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, but I didn't have that during my viewing experience.
I don't know if this is the song's fault or the musical's fault, but when the montage, when he's actually like slitting people's throats, when he's being Sweeney Todd, the montage, I muted the musical so I could think to myself, because it sounded exactly like a song, and I'll play them back to back here in the final edit, but it sounded exactly like the melody. Sounded like "It's Not Unusual."
To be alone by anyone.
And are you beautiful and pale with yellow hair like her? I'd want you beautiful and pale the way I've dreamed you were.
It's not unusual to be loved by anyone. It's not unusual to have fun with anyone.
It sounded exactly like that melody.
Make love with
anyone. And I don't I don't think that song copied Stephen Sondheim, but
I don't know. It might be. The one that got me was there's a song called like that where he keeps talking about Down by the Sea, and I just wanted him to say Where the Watermelons Grow.
Well, Down by the Sea is one of the most famous songs from the play.
Right. I don't think it's related to Down by the Sea Where the Watermelons Grow.
It's just wild to me. There's like famous songs from musicals. Like that's just like that Venn diagram.
You know 5,000 however many minutes from Rent. You know that song for sure.
Yeah. What?
You know the song 5,000 XXX number of minutes.
26,600.
You know that song. That's from Rent. I guarantee you've never seen Rent.
Sure. measure a year. I also know that
I
from The Office.
I don't know what you just saying.
I'm
assuming Mark did a bad job.
Broadway things from The Office.
I'm assuming Mark did a bad job, but I don't know it.
That's kind of the modern day. I mean, they made this joke on Seinfeld, right? All the high class stuff he knows are from Bugs Bunny cartoons. He knows, like, overture, curtain slides.
I mean, 100%.
We'll hit the heights.
What's the song called?
I just said The Office, but Measure Your Love, I think.
Measure Your Love?
From Rent.
Seasons of Love from Rent.
Seasons of Love. Yeah, something like that.
You guaranteed know that song, Jake.
Yeah, you do. No, the reason I know almost all Broadway references is from The Simpsons, if we're being clear. And then there are a few late stage ones that I know from The Office.
And I know a bunch from Bugs Bunny cartoons.
Bugs Bunny, I mostly know like Wagner, you know, like Ride of the Valkyries and shit.
I mean, yeah, but also
that's not Broadway.
There was a whole the composer of that was a recurring villain. In Bugs Bunny.
In what?
In
the
Bugs
composer
Bunny.
The composer of the
Ride of the Valkyries play was a recurring villain for Bugs Bunny.
Which, I mean, also we're now getting into like a deep, dark part of musical theater history because then we're getting into Nazism and stuff. But the Ring cycle of where Ride of the Valkyries actually comes from was a deeply Germanic play.
Oh, yeah.
1920, 1930.
Horrible. Yeah.
So, I just listened to that while they were having that conversation, and I do not believe I've ever heard it.
You've heard it.
Okay, well, that's a very, very, very famous song from Rent.
And that's fine. And I'm not saying, like, good or bad. I'm just saying the Venn diagram of musical famous music.
Wait. So how do you measure a year?
I don't understand how to answer that question. Time doesn't exist.
That was, I thought, if Jack had been paying attention, he would have, like, played up. He was reading notes. That fell on deaf.
Yeah, I was reading. I couldn't remember the actual thing that Ride of the Valkyries is from, of Wagner's, part of his Rings series, right?
Yeah, the Ring of Gyges, or I actually don't know how to say it.
Toot toot.
Nibelung.
Toot toot.
Yes, blow it. They make such a big. Okay, he's not done. Okay, now
he's not done. Stop. Oh God, stop.
They make such a big showing out of Johnny Depp boiling that kettle. That's a full cast iron kettle. The whole thing's made out of cast iron. They show it actually boiling. The whistling, the tea kettle. It whistles.
And
it's
he grabs
hot.
It.
Oh, wait, hold on.
He grabs it.
Like that?
And then he grabs it fully with both hands
just
to
grabs
beat
it.
That guy with.
Yeah. It
is a full cast iron boiling tea kettle. It is.
He's a demon.
Why?
Right? You're talking about Pirelli. He beats Pirelli with it, right?
What's he talking
about? Sacha Baron Cohen.
Does he beat Pirelli with it?
Yes,
yeah.
That's
that who
yes,
he beats,
that's
with,
who
it?
He beats
I
with it.
Remember. Yeah.
Either way, fucking what? Why show it boiling?
Because I think that's more of a metaphor for his. I think that's more of a metaphor, man.
And yeah, you want the metaphor of it boiling over and him steaming.
Yeah.
And it all coming.
You
to
laugh,
a head,
but that's exactly
the
why it's there.
It is, it's, but it. He yes. grabs
it's
it.
Why it's there. Why are you laughing about it?
He grabs the sides of a boiling hot cast iron kettle from the sides.
He's been working
hands.
On a fishing vessel, Jack. His hands are leathery. He doesn't feel pain in them anymore.
He has no nerve.
The only pain he feels is in his soul.
Fuck. Pain or not.
And his
be
hands.
Yeah, you would have burned your
burns
hands.
Burns on
you,
his hands. He has no more
you burned
hands.
Your hands.
The rest of the movie, he's walking around with like heavily bandaged hands.
But he doesn't give a shit. He doesn't give a shit, and no one mentions it.
Sacha Baron Cohen isn't getting up again because he didn't just bludgeon him to death with an 8-pound cast iron kettle. He also he should be burned to shit too.
Yeah, and he still wasn't dead.
He didn't like hold it against his head though.
Never.
He still got hit with it like 700
times.
Well,
yeah. Oh, he got bludgeoned. I mean, he didn't get back up. He was fucking unconscious.
He did get back up.
He got right back up.
Well, no, he didn't.
He
right back up.
Goes down
the chute.
He
got stuffed in the chest of the chest, and then he stands up out of it. He starts to stand up, and then he gets his throat slit.
Yeah.
Helena Bonham Carter.
He picks him up, and he gets his throat slit.
He's getting up.
Okay.
Somehow.
He's alive,
if,
and he
if,
shouldn't
if
be alive.
If I get hit by something really hot, I'm going to be worried more about the blunt force trauma than how hot it was.
Yeah.
I'm going to have surface
any,
burns.
There were no burns. He was.
This is a great nitpick because
he had burns,
it's
guys.
It's a nitpick.
He had burns.
Did he?
Yeah.
No.
Sideburns.
Oh, he had sideburns. Well, of course he had sideburns.
Okay. I concede that as a point to move on.
Yes. Jack, you're just going to have to keep going.
No, as a neat pick, I actually really like the scene where the Helena Bonham Carter gets thrown in the oven.
Oh, it's so stupid looking.
It's a pretty good and brutal scene as far as horror goes.
It's very stupid. They show you the oven door
is
just a
big
open chasm.
The
brutality element is more conceptual, though. Like, I can go there in concept, but not in the presentation.
But the presentation, they're making this based off of a stage play. And in that way, I think they did a great job of taking something brutal from the stage play and putting it on the screen.
Yeah, I mean, he throws her in an oven and burns her to death. Like,
this is, and that is my neat pick for the movie. I didn't want to put that in what the movie is right because it's too small.
But contrast that to the bodies falling down the chutes, which exists in every version of the stage play and is a fun part of the stage play, but they don't show you the bodies landing like head first and snapping their necks when they get down there. And that's how you should do a movie version of a play. Unlike the Helena Bonham Carter in the oven scene where it's just like, that just looks like shit. I understand what you're trying to evoke, but you've already shown to me.
You guys liked it a lot less than I did. I think they did a pretty solid job of showing someone in the initial stages of being thrown into a furnace.
Oh.
Nah. Then you shouldn't have shown me how the furnace worked.
Nah.
Nope.
Do you need to dive into a nitpick with this furnace?
I don't. No, the fire looked like shit, feelings but it towards was supposed to. Yeah. The grinder, the meat grinder they have down in the basement that she's teaching Toby how to use.
The comically large grinder?
Yeah.
Where stuff comes out the side.
Comically large grinder, she's not exerting herself hard enough. There is
like
so much meat being grinded. It's grinding like 4 inches per quarter turn. And it's so, she must be the strongest person in that whole fucking city.
Toby can do it. Dude, she's been making meat pies for years, Jack.
Toby can do it.
She's been grinding pussies for that long, and now it's just humans. It's the same thing.
I got a problem with the pies, too. How does the cockroach climb out of the fully baked pie Johnny Depp has?
Because you can't kill a cockroach.
Then he's like, maybe this was made with
cockroaches. You can't kill a cockroach, Jack.
It's more of a metaphor, man.
Yeah, the answer is always metaphor. The answer is always metaphor.
It's bad. There's a bad
metaphor, man.
Also, I don't care if you don't have meat. The pastry on the pie still looks pretty flaky and good. Just eat that shit. That looks tasty.
That part's true. They do look really good.
They look good.
On that subject, I think it's really funny that, like, all of a sudden, so cat meat, people don't like. Human meat, people fucking love, and she becomes a fucking Michelin star restaurant.
It'd be fattier. I mean.
I don't know.
Yes.
Sure, probably tastier.
Yes.
For sure fattier.
I'm not going to weigh in on whether or not I think cat tastes better than human.
I'm not either. I bet human tastes a lot better than cat.
I'll go on record.
Jesus Christ.
So human would be better than cat?
A lot.
It's going to have a higher fat content. Like, it's probably going to be better, right?
Yep.
Especially if you're grinding up and putting in a fucking meat pie. It was some spices? Yep. Maybe. Just saying maybe, Mark. Just saying.
You ever see Jaws 3? Because that's basically the exact plot.
I have seen Jaws 3, and I don't think that was
the exact plot.
I don't think that's right. That seems wrong.
Sunny quote, but okay.
That was my nitpick. That was a sunny quote?
Yeah.
Yes.
From when?
When Dee and Charlie become addicted to eating human meat. Season 4.
Oh,
yeah, that
would have
been like season...
That's
4? 3? 4?
Jaws 3?
Yeah.
Okay.
Like a long time ago.
They get addicted to human
the most
meat.
Dangerous
actually
game.
Raccoon meat. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. My bad. That's some extracurricular reading I need to do. What other nitpicks do
they show so many shots of Johnny Depp's straight razors that would have to be like actually chrome plated to not rust in a floorboard after that long, so there wouldn't be that effect. They're not that good razors if they're chrome plated, but that's a whole other thing. That's not
they're mythical.
That's a deeper nitpick.
It's a metaphor, man.
Yeah, but these are special razors that are
so
made with the blood of gods.
How round the top is, and they're sharp on the sides. Obviously, they're razors, but they're so rounded and fat on the top. And then at the end, he kills the judge by stabbing him in the neck. And you could not stab someone with a razor that's round and flat on top like that. And it's a razor. Why doesn't he just slit his throat?
You probably could stab someone.
It wouldn't do what happened.
It's in the wrist, Jack. Jacket's on the wrist. Mark, it's how you, wrist
he,
it.
He flips it around and holds it this way and stabs when he does it.
Yeah, with his he stabs with his wrist, though, in a
stab
jerking,
with the wrist.
Wristy motion.
In deliver.
Stab with the wrist.
It's
right
dumb.
In deliver.
Why then why show me all why practice? You've killed 100 people to practice, quote unquote, and then when it comes time to kill the person you want to kill, you don't do the thing you've been practicing, you do a thing that objectively wouldn't work
he
very well.
He still slit his throat. Yeah. Yo, he still slit his throat. That was after. You got to add some like flair to it.
I do wish there was like just a blood rain scene where he like slit his throat, the judge's throat, and is just like on his knees in front, just like showering.
Well, I think
blood.
Like the more thematic thing.
That'd been so good.
The connective tissue that they didn't go for. So here, let's do this, Jack. You hated the stabbing, but I think we're all in agreement that he's the main target. They should have done something greater. What would have worked better probably would be callback-ish to the barber off, and he does like a quick
shave off,
and there's like 700 throat slits, and then
like
he's
like
doing
a samurai,
the
right?
All
like
throat
the
slits. Yeah,
the gourd looks intact for a second, and then slides in half,
and then there's like a ton. Like that would be way better, right?
So much better.
God, we're so much smarter than these assholes.
Yeah. Fuck you, man, Stephen Sondheim, and
you
Tim Burton.
Idiot.
I don't think we're after Sondheim. I feel like we're after Burton.
Yeah. Oh yeah. 100%. Okay. Look at that nerd.
For sure, after Burton.
That guy's only done like 3 dozen wildly successful movies that we both, all three of us love. Yeah. We
started this by talking about how none of us are really Tim Burton fans.
I don't like Tim Burton. I don't like.
But so either. Okay. He has three films that you love though.
That you love.
I'm okay with Edward Scissorhands.
That's the one. Okay,
Beetlejuice is
so
his best
confused.
Movie. Beetlejuice
I'm
is
so
his
oh,
best
I like
movie.
Beetlejuice.
I'm so confused about the take that you actually have.
Yeah, me too.
I don't
know if you like Tim Burton or not.
Yeah,
I don't.
And are there actually three movies of his that you love?
So I feel like Tim Burton did his auteur thing early in his career, where he'd made like Edward Scissorhands and became extremely popular, and then got pushed into a bunch of different directions and made things that were less, how to say this, like less in line with what his vision for film was. And sometimes they worked. Beetlejuice was pretty good. I liked Beetlejuice.
Beetlejuice is awesome, dude.
But
okay.
Like,
Mark,
then
I feel
he
like
does other things like Batman.
You have,
and
then you have, you
Willy
misunderstand
Wonka.
His career. His first movie is Pee-wee's Big Adventure. His second movie is Beetlejuice. His third movie
yeah,
is
so
Batman.
I'm not, that's the thing. I guess I'm not approaching it from a chronological standpoint, which is a problem. I exist beyond the fourth dimension, Jack. So if you view it from a Tesseract standpoint.
I don't understand what you're trying to say about Tim Burton. I feel like he's kind of always done exactly what he wanted to do. And I might like Pee-wee's Big Adventure better than Beetlejuice. Just for the record, I don't know.
I might agree with that as well. Just
they're
based
both
off
good.
Of our own histories with Large Marge or whatever.
They're both good. They're both good. Yeah.
But I guess what I would say is his stylistic approach to movies doesn't vibe well with me, except in extremely specific circumstances.
Well, and I like all his production.
I think he was
work
probably
like
the right director
Christmas.
For this movie, but I don't think this movie needed to happen.
Agreed.
Yeah,
I'm ready to get the fuck out of here.
Yeah, let's go to.
We
well,
haven't
not
even
yet,
done ratings.
We're gonna go to ratings.
That one.
Yeah, we're gonna go to ratings.
No, I refuse.
And are you beautiful and pale with yellow hair like her? I'd want you beautiful and pale the way I've dreamed you were.
We over at ADC Horror use a 1 through 10 rating system to rate the movies we watch. For one, think of how the prospector would rate the number of important things they hit.
It isn't nothing important. Nothing important. Just guts is all you hit.
And for 10, think of how Hamilton would rate his intelligence.
The problem is a lot of brains with no polish.
Story is the first category to rate these movies. Jake, you did the first part of the 30-second plot synopsis. What's your story rating?
It's so Reading. Hard with these. It's so hard with these, Reading. Man. I gave it a 5.5. I just Andy Daltoned it because I think in general the story that you have here is actually pretty decent. Like, it's intriguing, right? Like, you have a fairly complex villain structure with the hero kind of coming back from being maliciously targeted and fucked over for the majority of his life. Like, that's cool, and it sets up this really interesting path for him to go down. But then you have the presentation element that I think I have to pull out a little bit from what I would typically put into the immersion category, because it's literally the way the story is presented, which is musical. And I don't want to shit on it again, but I want to say it's not for me, so I'm just going to put it right in the middle here, guys.
Fair enough. Mark, what about you?
I went a little bit higher. I gave it a 6.5. It's the same thing. It's a good story overall, but none of the credit should be given to the film adaptation, right? It's purely the original story.
Yes. Good point. Yep.
So it's interesting. I gave it a 6, and I agree with what you're saying, but at the same time, I also think this does deserve credit for being one of the best film adaptations of a stage musical we've seen. It's still not great, but it's one of the best. It's just like a good indication that we probably just shouldn't be doing that a lot of the time.
I think that's an indication that we need to watch more film adaptations.
Probably. Yeah, probably. That might be a bit of a blind spot for us. I'm not going to lie.
Yeah. World building and immersion. Jake?
Oh, boy. This is where it's going to start to hurt, guys. I gave this a 3.5. So world building, I thought, was largely good. I understand some of the issues that we mentioned. Like, I think it was you, Mark, that talked about some of, like, the transitions feeling a bit hollow, especially it's hard to decouple this.
For the record, I liked the transitions. I just thought they were a bit cartoonish. But I like that they paid homage to what you were saying.
Okay.
Or on stage.
The world of London and the particular, like, dingy griminess, I think the Tim Burton treatment worked pretty well. But from an immersion standpoint, again, like, musicals aren't for me. It's going to be low. So that's ultimately what I did.
Yeah. Mark, how about you?
Yeah, I gave it a 5.5. From the immersion standpoint, it's bad. It's actively bad. I don't think it's an easy movie to watch. From the world-building standpoint, I think they do a great job. I think the shining, guiding light of this movie is the set design and, like, costuming and stuff, which will probably come back up when we talk about effects. But the world-building side of this is actually really fun. I love the meat pie shop. I love the barber chair that he makes that, like, shoots down into the basement. That part's super duper cool. So ultimately I kind of just shot the middle between those two and gave it an exactly average score.
Yeah, that's interesting. I gave it a 6, and I understand what you both have said. I think one thing this movie benefits from is that, like, my wife and I really liked when we went and saw this as a stage production, and it's really fun to see how reverent Johnny Depp clearly is of the stage production of it and wanting to be, like, loyal and accurate to that. And he does a really good job of that. Now, that said, when you do that as a movie, it's not that fun to watch all the time, and it's really boring a lot of the time. So we had fun watching it like that as, like, a, you know, a representation of this really fun thing. But that said, on its own, it's just not that good. So I was having trouble splitting the difference between those two feelings. I do think he builds an incredible world, though, as Tim Burton always does, effectively. So it's going to be a 6 for me. And that's going to take us into Scare Factor. Jake?
Yeah, I mean, too. Like, this is going to get you from the perspective of, like, queasiness if you don't like neck stuff. Like, I know certain people, throat slits are really hard to take. There's a lot of that here. It's done in a very over-the-top cartoony way, though, and that is not the focus of this film, so it is a low score.
Mark?
I gave it a 1. This isn't a scary movie.
Yeah.
End of sentence. Full stop.
I gave it a 2. I agree with Jake. I'll also just note, we haven't noted it yet, but that the judge is one of the most heinous, evil motherfuckers we've ever seen, like, committed to film. He fucking sucks.
Hey, he's kind of a bastard.
He's just a real piece of shit. Fucker.
Bastard. Fucker.
And that's going to take us into effects or jujitsu slacker up. Jake?
I gave this a 7. I think that this movie looks phenomenal. I already mentioned it. Like, stages, the costuming, the props that are used, all, like, really good. It's a musical. And from an audio standpoint, nothing really resonated with me, man.
Most,
like,
of the main
so
cast can't sing effectively.
There's so much time spent. Yeah, there's so much time spent on song, and none of it was banging. So I had to detract
to
a little bit.
Take in with your ears.
Yeah. Auditorily harsh for me. So I'm detracting a little bit from the audio perspective on a musical, which it brings it down, which is a shame because I did think this movie looked really good.
Yeah. Mark.
Yeah, I'm basically in the same neighborhood. I gave it a 6.5. Tim Burton has his style. I think it lends itself well here. Whatever. The sets and props are good, as we've already talked about. Costumes, great. Sound mixing. We haven't talked about that at all yet, I don't think. The mixing and overall sound design of this movie are executed as well as you could do for a musical.
Yeah, I didn't have to turn it up and turn it down, which I often do for things like
right.
this.
So
yeah.
So in that way, it is an extremely well-executed musical for an adaptation from a stage play. So in that way, I it certainly deserves to be better than average, and that's where I ultimately landed.
Yeah, give it a 7. I also think other things we haven't touched on yet. Use of color is really, really cool. Cinematography is beautiful. Like this is
use of lack of color. Judicious use of lack of color.
Judicious use of lack of color. Yes, but it's apart from that, I fully agree with you guys. It's gonna make it overall, Jake.
Yeah, I gave this 4. Like this movie doesn't really work for me, man. I could totally see going higher on this, but for me. It has really interesting pieces and it does not come together into something that I'm that interested in taking in and having watched it. Yeah. Not average, unfortunately.
Mark?
I gave it a 5, so a half bump below average. Kind of the same thing. Like, it's a well put together, it's a musical that's well made, but it's staffed by people who are not good at musicals. So in that way, it's average, but slightly less than average.
Yeah, I give it a 5. The best parts of this movie are we're reminding my wife and I of the fun time we had seeing this as a stage play. It's like that as a movie experience is not
exactly.
It doesn't
I'm
really
sure this
stand
would be great.
On its own.
It just if you saw it with like a good cast on the
yeah,
stage.
Yeah, well, the thing that fucking sucks though to me is that when you have a movie that has a cast like this, I shouldn't feel the way that I felt at the end of it.
Yeah.
Bad? I shouldn't. Like that it should have been more. Like
you want to lay down on a couch and tell me how you felt?
It should have been more. Like when you have Alan Rickman and Helena Bonham Carter and Johnny Depp, regardless of your feelings for him, like when you have all of these people.
He's a chode, but
yes.
Yeah, I don't like it.
And he's been a great actor in a lot of different films over the course of the years.
Yeah.
Yes.
He was right to saddle up with Tim Burton because they have a very similar vibe.
They do. What they brought to the table here, I think, was a little bit lost
Mark,
on what this
Johnny Depp's performance as Rango changed my life.
Cool. I can tell that by all the Rango tattoos.
I can actually believe that.
My Rango face tattoo.
That's his ass tattoo, man. Got that on the left cheek.
I got that right in the hole, dude.
Surrounding it. Encompassing
a big
it.
Rango circle.
Like it encompasses your soul.
To whom would we recommend this?
No one.
I want a Rango or a Boros, but around my butthole, please.
I want a Rango eating itself around my anus.
Oh, God. I don't recommend this to anyone.
I would recommend this to my like theater nerd friends.
Yeah,
I guess.
If you're deep
I don't know why they wouldn't have already seen this.
Yeah,
there's
but you've definitely
no
seen
one.
It if you're a theater person.
Yeah, if you haven't already seen this, I don't know why I'm recommending it to you.
Yeah.
If you're one of these people that still thinks in the Johnny Depp Amber Heard dispute that one of them is a good guy, watch this and dislike Johnny Depp a little more because there's no good guys in that fight. They both suck.
Is that still a conversation?
I don't
anyone
think anyone. I don't think anyone gives a shit. I made the mistake of bringing up Johnny Depp in that way at the end, so it set him off.
Oh, yeah.
But also, I do see it happening fairly frequently.
I don't.
That people are still debating it.
I think people are over it, man.
Do you? You're in a weird circle.
I think people are over
Maybe
it.
Maybe I'm in a weird
circle.
I don't know what to do now that I'm not on Twitter. I don't know what to do.
The book is out on them. Everyone hates both of them, and that's it.
They both suck. Yeah. They're both bad people. Yeah.
Which is the correct choice.
They suck.
We weighed in, and both of them suck.
Let's get the fuck out of here.
Shocking.
And the movie's not great.
Yeah. Yes, exactly.
This has been episode 269 of the A to Z Horrorcast.
Nice.
If you're still here hanging out with us and you would like what we got going on, you can check out the links to our stuff in the description below. As Jack mentioned at the top of the episode, we have a Patreon. You can get some perks if you want to throw us some money there and know that your money is going somewhere better than us because we are giving all of our proceeds to a much better cause than the creation of this podcast, as it's been for pretty much the whole year now. It's going to Planned Parenthood, and that will be the same for the foreseeable future, at least. So, the music, as always, has been coming at you from Super Bear. There are links down there in the description below as well. And next week, we have the last movie in the current selection. And I say next week very lightly because we're kind of on our own schedule at this point, but we're bringing you content when we can.
Vacations
and life. The next one's coming at you from listener Chris. Thanks for the selection and recommendation, Chris. We are going to be checking out
Triangle,
which is from 2009. I've never seen this. I think Mark has.
Oh, yeah. I don't know if Jack has. Lost Fears for Fears movie.
Sick. That's right. That's right. I've never seen it. I don't know if Jack has. Regardless, we're going to be weighing in on the next episode. So until then, get your buddies, grab some beers, and go watch some horror movies. Have a great week, everybody.
I have to pay for this movie twice.
Shrug week, everybody.
I want a Rango or a Boros, but around my butthole, please.